Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But, well, please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from Colorado, Jane Schindler. She's with the Eagle Forum there. And Jane has produced an amazing video. It's called Columbine, What Really Happened. And it's the story of the tragedy that occurred at Littleton High School. And, I'm going to let Jane give you a little of the background of the video and how she happened to produce it. Jane, do you want to sort of tell our listeners how you happened to make this video?
Oh, certainly. Thank you, Dr. Stan, for the invitation. It's always a privilege to be on your program. Our Columbine video, it turns out it's needed more today than ever, so that the parents everywhere can know what their children are being faced with. We made the Columbine video as a result of another video that we had made in 1990. In 1990, I was doing a workshop for the Colorado Pro-Family Conference, and the workshop was about the use of subliminals in children's school books. And after the workshop, this young lady came up to me and said, "Mrs. Schindler, you don't know the half of it. I attend Columbine High School, and I wanted to show you a booklet that we put together in class." And the book was called Masquerade. And in her book are all these pictures and drawings and poems about death. And it was very, very gruesome. And her father was a very prominent physician in Littleton. And I was just horrified when I heard what she had to say. And I asked her if we could interview her and get her information out to other Eagle Forum people across the United States. She agreed. We went to her home. We videotaped her presentation, and we got it out across the country. And she was talking about what a school day was like, life was like at Columbine High School.
And, of course, really this death education and suicide education and this almost obsession with death just permeated every aspect of education, didn't it?
It did. And her father was totally unaware of this. I mean, here he was a physician. He wanted the very best for his daughter. And anyone who lived in Littleton at that time knew that Columbine High School boy was the Harvard or Yale of high schools, and that every prominent person would want their child to go there. He didn't realize that what he was subjecting his daughter to.
And of course, the interesting thing is this girl actually tried to commit suicide, and didn't some of her classmates try to commit suicide after this depressing experience?
Yes, they did. And no one seemed to realize how horrible an experience that these kids were having to go through, and that class after class after class was filled with nothing but depression. And going to mortuaries and picking out their caskets, going to graveyards and doing grave rubbings. And I asked her, I said, what's a grave rubbing? And she said, well, that's where you go to a tombstone, you put a piece of paper on it, and you take a pencil, and you mark over it.
Hold that thought for just a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jane Sindler, and she's talking about, of course, the death education that was at Columbine High School. And of course, the whole idea that what they were doing, tell about the grave robbing, this idea of sort of tracing the message on the gravestone onto a piece of paper.
Well, the children would put a piece of paper onto the tombstone, and you take a pencil and you mark across it to get the image to appear on your paper. They had the kids write their own obituaries. They had suicide talking days. And this so overwhelmed this beautiful young lady that she felt she didn't have anything to live for. And that she said that, you know, as a child, and, you know, most teenagers are so impressionable anyway, had felt that maybe she should commit suicide. But she was afraid to. But after all of her school classes, death was looked at as something to be desired. That it was really freeing you from this body to do whatever your heart would desire. And this body was holding you back. So death was made to look very enticing. I mean, this is—it just sounds absolutely bizarre.
Well, I think it is bizarre, and yet, of course, this is being taught increasingly all across America today.
Yes, it is, and my heart just breaks for the children in public school today, and that parents absolutely are going to have to inform themselves and take a stand for their children. I was talking with Phyllis Schlafly a couple of days ago, and we were talking about so many children being labeled as learning disabled. So we'll just give them a pill, and they will immediately then become smart and behave well, and this pill is just going to be the magic formula. Well, we think that the parents should have a label also. If we're so quick to label the children as ADD and ADHD, I think we should label the parents and give them a label of the lazy parent syndrome or the lazy teacher syndrome. Because that's really what it seems to come down to, is that they're not willing to really get in there with their children and find out the fact that possibly the child just can't read. And that seems incredible to a lot of parents when their children are in middle school or high school.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Jane. We'll be right back with our stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jane Sindler. And, of course, she was talking before we left about grave robbing. That's when you go to a graveyard and you take a piece of paper and put it over the tombstone. And then, of course, you color with a pencil. And then you can have the shadow of what the inscription was on the tombstone. But why are they focusing our children's attention on death and suicide and the macabre rather than on the important things in life? And, of course, this does nothing but, of course, really give many of these children a totally shaded outlook of life. And this is what they were teaching at Columbine High School when this young lady was there. This is what they were teaching when the two murderers were there, Klebold and Harris. So let's pick up the story from there.
Well, after we had distributed Tara's story across the country, the Atlantic Monthly magazine did an investigation of into death ed in the school, and they went much further than just Columbine High School and found out that indeed death education was being taught clear across the country, and that it wasn't exactly labeled death ed, and that it would be integrated into every subject, whether it was math, English, of course, you could read all of the morbid stories, Edgar Allan Poe, and on with your English class. And Congressman Tom Tancredo, before he was elected to the state legislature, was a middle school civics teacher. And he really didn't like the curriculum that he had to teach. But his thought was, it's only 1 hour. And, you know, that can't be too bad. I mean, 1 hour of depressing thoughts and subjects just couldn't be too bad. But then, after he was appointed by President Ronald Reagan to head up Region 8 Secretary of Department of Education, he could then see the much bigger picture, that it wasn't just his class, it was all the classes.
In other words, they would weave these macabre, depressing thoughts into the English and geography and mathematics and everything, and this focusing attention on death and destruction.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so we asked Tom, well, all right, so what's your opinion? Why do you think this would be? And he said, well, trace it back to money. Every child who crosses the threshold of a public school, and a lot of times a private school, are a dollar sign. In that, if your child is depressed, well, gosh, there's a pill for depression. And let's give them a pill. And there's money there. And how every child that's labeled learning disabled, the school gets more money. And so it was like the children were being set up. And he was with the Department of Education, was tried to change things and tried to bring these facts out. But he was only one. And we need many, many more parents. People need to be aware of what's happening, especially since Congress just this last year passed a law appropriating another $82 million for more deaf education across this country from kindergarten through high school, for more deaf education in the school.
And, of course, what a terrible tragedy that they're using our federal tax dollars to focus our children's attention on deaf, especially after what happened at Columbine High School, because I really believe that these children were the victims of the educational system that they've been subjected to.
Absolutely.
If you're trying to destroy the soul of our children, you couldn't do a better job than they're doing. Well, anyway, of course, you actually got the story out, and the Atlantic Monthly picked it up, and didn't one of the major television networks pick up the story as well?
Yes, 2020, this was back in September of 1990, Tom Jarrell thought, well, you know, gee, this sounds like an interesting story. I mean, this just really cannot be happening. So they set about to do their own investigation, and they, too, interviewed Tara Becker, the same young lady we had interviewed. They, you know, it's 10 years has passed. They bring her back, or no, I'm sorry, several years had passed. They brought her back to Columbine High School, asked her to describe her classes just as we had, and they just could not believe that across the country, we have the public schools, and parents should ask their children, have you been taken to a mortuary as a field trip, a graveyard? Do you write your obituaries? Things of this nature. There's some real red flags there that the parents need to be asking these questions, because the school system acts as though this is just a normal, everyday happening, that we're going to do this. Now, you as an adult, how do you feel about going to visit a mortuary and pick out your casket and write your own obituary? How do you feel about those things? And yet we're asking our children to do this. And Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, all of the information that we were able to ascertain was that these two young men were into scouts and sports and just doing all the normal things that little boys would do before they started Columbine High School. And then there was a drastic change in those two boys once they started school. And then you have to add to it what our media does to the children with the video games and the movies and the music.
I think especially the music, because of this, I believe music has a profound impact on people's minds and on their souls. And of course, most of the music that the kids are listening to today, I believe, comes right out of the pit of hell.
Oh, I believe it too. With Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, parents need to understand that, yes, we do have the freedom of choice to pick and choose the movies that we want to go watch. However, if you're a child in a classroom, you are a captive audience. The teacher brings a movie into the classroom rated R. Now, the way they get around that is that the teacher is the adult to be showing this movie to those 17 and under. And when a movie is taken into the classroom, it goes from the realm of just being a movie to becoming curriculum. And they are to discuss the movie, and they are to learn from the movie.
And what are you going to learn from an R-rated movie?
Well, whatever happened to Gilbert Grape, The Crucible, Go Ask Alice, Basketball Diaries, all of these movies being shown at Columbine High School. And folks, I got to tell you, nothing has changed at Columbine. They're still doing this.
And of course, the movies have such a tremendous impact because you got this visual image, and everything you see and everything you hear is indelibly imprinted on your brain for the rest of your life. You may not be able to recall it, but it's there, just as anything you put on the computer is there. It's recorded, and that's what they're doing to the minds of these kids. And they're giving them all this negative, sensual, and then, of course, you get into the sex education, which certainly does not promote moral values in any manner or means.
Well, and we've not touched on before Channel 1 in the schools. The schools sold the kids' minds for 15 minutes a day for a TV set in every room. And the children are required to watch 7 to 15 minutes every day of Channel 1.
And what's on Channel 1?
Well, Channel 1 is full of Hollywood commercials promoting the newest movies, the sleaziest clothes, the rock bands, and their sales pitch was that this would be the world news geared to teenage level, and that this would bring the news happening around the world into the classroom, and the children could discuss the news so that they would be informed. Now, do you have a TV set at home with the news on it? Isn't there news on the radio, newspapers? But no, we have to now have it in the classroom. But along with the news comes the commercials to this captive audience. And they're promoting, as I say, the teenage movies, the clothing, the soft drinks, the candy, all of this right, they're right there where they can get to the kids directly this message. Whether it's Burger King or Coca-Cola, you name it. And that time to advertise on Channel 1 is extremely expensive for these different companies, but it has to be very lucrative for them, or they wouldn't do it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the sex education there.
The sex education, we had interviewed, and again, on our video, you will see so much of what we're telling you here in chronological order as it happened at Columbine. One of the young men that was shot first by Eric Harris, after he had recovered, we asked him to describe a typical day at Columbine High School. And he started off by talking about his first hour class was his health class. In the health class, he said they brought in what they called a sexpert. And this was someone to explain to them all about sex. And one of the girls in the class was told if she would come up to the front of the room and demonstrate how to put a condom on a banana, that she would get extra credit for that. And they went into great detail about how to open it without breaking it, and said that when she did, in fact, open it and put it on the banana, the kids clapped and cheered. And this was very gross, and he goes on to explain what the teacher had to say. And he said, and you know, he brought his little boy with him to class. And he talked about how in that same class, kids were trading cigarettes back and forth, laughing, carrying on. He went on to talk about his English class, and that they had to act out a play of where someone commits suicide. Now, this was in 2001. And when, after we had made our video, we had several parents do an early preview of it. And they seemed to be upset that we had included this in our video. And this is incredible. It's okay that our children are subjected to this, but you're offended to hear about it? It's just amazing. Parents need to be asking their children, what happened in school today? What did you talk about in class? What are you reading? And when you realize that, I have a statistic here in front of me, a high school senior will have spent over 14,000 hours in the classroom. Yet experts tell us parents average 1 hour a week in meaningful discussion with their children. That makes the odds 20-1 in favor of the classroom. Incredible.
Well, it really is. And, of course, I'm really very, very concerned. So what they're getting in school, of course, will shape their lives for the rest of their lives. And the great tragedy is that, you know, if these kids are not getting a good moral education, if they're not being focused on things that will give them hope and something to look forward to, why, their whole outlook is going to be jaded. Now, that's really what sort of happened to Klebold and Harris, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And when you know, this is after the fact, and they're talking about the red flags, and they're blaming the parents, and they're saying, well, why didn't the parents do something? Why didn't they know what their kids were doing? Well, Eric Harris's parents did seek help for Eric, and what they got was a pill. He was put on Luvox. And both Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, in their wild behaviors that had extended even then from the school to, they said, if anyone upset them, I won't use their words, but if anyone upset them, they would do a little deed on their home, in that they would go and put super glue in people's door their door locks. They would put off batteries and fire pipe bombs in their yards, drive tire tracks through their yard, all kinds of things to terrorize and upset fellow students if they made fun of them or whatever. Just they didn't, anybody objected to what these two boys were doing. And it wasn't just the two boys.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll bring our other stations back on right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're just talking about Harris and Klebold, and just what a couple of unhappy boys these were. Certainly the attitude and it changed once they got into high school and began subject to this fixation on death. And then what about the sex education? Do you want to talk about the sex education that they were giving? Very graphic, certainly nothing from a moral point of view. Everything was aimed at destroying their modesty and any ambitions. Really just flagrant, almost frank pornography, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Well, for example, Dylan Klebold helped with building sets for drama class, and when they produced the school play, Well, the school play that the kids were acting out that year was Go Ask Alice. And if any parent has read that book, it is absolutely foul. The language is horrible. The sexual deviancy in there is just pitiful. And yet this is chosen for the high school kids to act out. And I find it very, very difficult to understand how these kids in a school play could act out this book. And yet, this is where they were to focus their attention on. One of the movies that was shown at the high school for one of their English classes was Basketball Diaries.
No, I don't know that one. Is that another one of these foul, depressing, sexually explicit stories?
Yes, it is. It's about a high school where, are you ready? Basketball Diaries stars Leonardo DiCaprio. It's a high school. The boy is upset. And so he wears a trench coat. He comes to school with a shotgun, and he shoots up the classroom.
Now, this is what the picture that they're showing in high school then.
Right, and this is what Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold had seen. Now, does it strike any chords with you that they wore trench coats and brought guns to school and shot up their school and their classmates? I mean, the idea was planted there in that, and if I was a teacher, I would be terrified to think that these children are being fed this.
But you see, why would you give this to your children? Why not give them stories of heroism or, stories with a strong moral message? This is being done intentionally, I believe, of course, to create just exactly what happened. In other words, they're playing games with these children's minds, looking for the weak link, and, of course, they found it in Klebold and Harris.
Mm-hmm. They did. And
I mean, you could not do such a bad job unintentionally. And I think one of the most important things, Jane, is this has never been brought out. People are always looking for other explanations, but they never want to talk about the school's responsibility for what it programmed into these poor kids' minds.
Absolutely. And just this week, a couple of days ago, here in Colorado, Montbello, Colorado, we had another killing in Montbello High School. This time it was with a knife. And the headlines of the paper, though, instead of saying school killing, it said cafeteria killing. So I really believe that our media, in cahoots with the National Teachers Association, has said, let's bury it. Let's don't put out there that these things are happening in the schools. It might alarm someone.
I mean, parents might find out what we're doing to their minds of their children.
Well, isn't it interesting now that every middle school and every high school has to have a uniformed police officer on duty? Was there a police officer at your school when you went to school?
No, there sure wasn't.
No. And the teachers had control, and if we were caught chewing gum, that was really tough. And today, it's gone to where the children are in total control, and it's almost like the inmates are running the asylum. And the teachers have let this happen. And children are really desirous of discipline and leadership, and when they're allowed to do their own thing, they don't know what it is.
And of course, this is what we're really teaching the children in school, not a sense of moral values, because we've taken moral values out of the school. We've taken God and prayer and the Ten Commandments. In fact, the Supreme Court held that we couldn't post the Ten Commandments because they wouldn't do any good if the children, unless the children read them. If they read them, they might obey them. And they might obey, this idea of thou shalt not kill, and thou shalt not commit adultery, and thou shalt not bear false witness, and thou shalt not steal. And that would be a violation of the wall of separation that exists between church and state. That was exactly the reasoning of the Supreme Court when they took the Ten Commandments out of our schools. Why do you think that they did that, or did they have an agenda?
Well, they have an agenda.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Jane Schindler, and we're talking about her video, Columbine, What Really Happened. And let me recommend it to you. It's an excellent video. We think that the message here, everybody who cares about their children, everybody who's concerned about what's happening to our society, everybody who has a child or grandchild in government schools needs to see this video because it's very, very well done. Well, Jane, why don't you tell us a little bit about the video and, of course, what you actually project in this video. Now, of course, this is an update of the one that you had done, what was it, 6 or 8 or 10 years ago?
Right. I think another thing that would be so very, very helpful in this video, I had a call just yesterday, a grandmother who's very concerned that in her grandchildren's school, they're having a Shel Silverstein week.
Tell our listeners about Shel Silverstein.
Well, she called. She wanted to know where she could get our information on Shel Silverstein. I said, well, you need the Columbine video because it's in there and it presents it in just, you know, a nutshell of exactly what's happening.
Well, now, who was Shel Silverstein and why is he important?
Well, in the 1960s, Harper & Row Publishing Company sought out Shel Silverstein, who was a playboy author, illustrator.
He was a pornographer.
Pornographer, yes, to do children's books. And in his own words, he said he didn't think that he could do children's books, but they convinced him that he could. And so in every one of his so-called children's books, on every page, there is a sexual image, witchcraft, total disrespect, anarchy. It's just incredible, and yet we're having at a charter school here in Denver a Shel Silverstein week, and Phyllis Schlafly was saying that over Christmas, she went into Barnes & Noble to do some last-minute Christmas shopping, and she said all over the bookstore was Shel Silverstein being promoted in a big way. And she said, do people not realize?
They really don't realize. In fact, my secretary had brought me a Shel Silverstein book to show it to me. She had heard your program with me before, and she found that she had bought one of these for her daughter, so she brought it to me, and it is just exactly as you describe it, only worse. And it is incredible. This is for a 6 or 7 year old children, 5, 6, 7 year old children. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jane was just describing that somewhere in the 1960s, Harper and Row, or one of the major textbook, school textbook groups, sought out Shel Silverstein, who was a pornographer. He worked for Playboy. He drew sexually explicit cartoons, and they asked him to do books for children. And so he did children's books, and they're very popular today. They're all about sexual imagery, and we're talking about 5 to 7 year old children. Is about that the age group would they be using his books?
Oh, well, that's where it starts. And that's a start.
Okay, and when you see these books, you know, if you go from page to page and you understand what they're doing, they're planting these sexually explicit ideas in the minds of the children. It is totally evil, in my opinion. And when you look at these books, Shel Silverstein, you can go down to a bookstore, you'll find them, and understand they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the parents to know. And the average parent would look at the book, and if somebody hadn't told them what was there, they wouldn't see it. And once you point it out, they're horrified. Would that be a fair statement to make, Jane?
Yes, I was. And I remember my husband's reaction when we first found it. And it's like, we were reviewing children's books for Eagle Forum, and it was like I was on a parent's book review committee for my son's junior high school, and we began to review children's books. And so I thought, well, perhaps we should know more about the author. So when I went to the public library and I looked up Shel Silverstein, I mean, it just jumped right off the page at me when they said he was Playboy, and he was a pornographer. And
so that's what they get to do our children's books for, our good children all across America. Now, and this is in schools, and it's in the bookstores, and parents are buying these books because they're being pushed. And if you don't understand what they're doing to the mind and soul of your kids, why, then you become part of the problem out there in the listening audience.
Tuesday night on 60 Minutes 2, they had a segment on there about the major publishing companies now deciding to go public with promoting pornography. And they're now calling it smart porn. And that the major publishing companies are going to do this. And I thought, they're just coming out of the closet now with it, because they've been doing this for years. But they've been doing it for children. Maurice Sendak is another one. Dr. Seuss used to do adult porn. And these people, understand how this works with the School Library Association. They choose the books. They create their own million sellers, best sellers, because when a school picks your book to buy for their classroom or their library, millions of your book are purchased. And so this immediately elevates you to someone who has sold millions of copies. And so they have created their own deviant people that they promote. Now, understand, the National Education Association is just absolutely in love with Shel Silverstein. They're in love with Dr. Seuss. And they really love Harry Potter and R.J. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter's books. It's just incredible. If the school system and the media are really on their bandwagon, probably should take another look.
And of course, I think the thing to understand about Rowling is that she is promoting witchcraft and a morbid fascination on the part of our children with the witchcraft and the occult, and of course accessing the other dimension. And there really is another dimension out there, and there is power that you can get if you become a witch, but we certainly don't want our children getting into that, because of course that endangers their eternal souls.
Well, Columbine High School is recommending reading Harry Potter. And my question was, I thought Harry Potter was for elementary school. What are we doing recommending this in the high school? But it's recommended reading.
Because it's going to get the kids into the occult. That's what it's really about. And of course, there is an effort, a very conscious effort, to introduce our children into this dark side, into these demonic spirits. And of course, witchcraft is an access to the other dimension.
Mm-hmm. And the publishing companies spend millions of dollars researching what sells. And they know that sex and death sells, whether it's pornography to an adult or whether it's these school books that is to create the appetite for this stuff when the children become adults.
And one of the things you do in one of your part of your movie is you actually interview one of the young boys who was actually shot there, you know, and you point out, you know, he tells you what happens in their sex education class, and we don't have to describe it here on the radio, but we will say it is totally vulgar and totally out of place, especially for kids. What are these ninth or tenth grade kids?
Yes. And the things that, you know, being the parent, and you always have that idea that, well, it's not going to happen to my child. It's not going to happen in my child's school. Well, this is exactly what the mother of Mark Taylor thought. And she heard that she was coming home from work. She hears on the radio on the news that there's been a shooting at Columbine High School and that a lot of the kids are being held hostage. Well, she knew that her son was there, so she immediately heads for the school, and all the way to the school she's praying, oh, please, God, not my son. when she gets to the school, it's all blocked off, and every parent is being diverted to one of the middle schools to await news. And she's there in the crowd with the rest of the parents. All of a sudden, they asked for the mother of Mark Taylor to come to the front. And she said she didn't know how she got there. Her knees went weak, and she finally gets to the front, and they tell her that her son has been shot numerous times and that she is to go immediately to the hospital. When she gets to the hospital, her husband meets her there. Mark is in surgery, and they begin to pray, please, God, let him come to surgery. Well, and then it was, please, God, let him come through several other surgeries. And then, please, God, save his leg. And please, God, help him to walk again. And through all of this, they're financially destroyed with who is responsible for all these medical bills that this family now has. Is it the school insurance? Is it the parents of the killers? Their own insurance? How in the world are they ever going to pay all of these bills?
What did happen as far as the bills are concerned, do you recall?
The family was devastated. They did receive some settlement, but it wiped them out financially. They lost everything.
Well, you know, I think one of the interesting things is that Klebold and Harris seem to pick out Christian children. Did you notice that they seemed to at least some of the children, that they knew to be Christians and asked them about their faith?
They did, and the story was put out that they were going to get even with the jocks in the schools who had bullied them. Well, the opposite was true. We interviewed one of the jocks that was shot in the library, and after he was shot, he had to lay there and watch Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold assassinate their friend, his friends, and so he describes his experience to us on the video and what he went through. And listening to Eric Harris ask this girl if she believed in God, and this young man was also a Christian, but Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold wouldn't have known that. But it's just heartbreaking to think of what these young people went through. And then, of course, knowing that Eric Harris was on Luvox, he had been drinking also. Now, he was court-ordered into an anger management class. Both boys were. And in the anger management class, he was court-ordered to be put on Luvox. Now, if you are an underage person, are you going to tell anyone that you're drinking and drinking heavily? And, of course, the last thing that it's bad enough that you suffer mania and these feelings of delusion, and then you add another chemical to it. No wonder these boys were just totally maniacs.
Well, of course, I think with the education, with no moral values, just toleration of violence, and of course they were into all sorts of video games, of playing violence and killing people on video games, and then the music, and then the Luvox on top of that. Let's go to Tim, who's calling from Indianapolis. Hi, Tim. Did you have a question?
Oh, hi, Dr. Stan. Yes, Jane. I'm appalled at this glorification of death. Do you guys remember about 15 years ago there was a movie out called Bernie's Vacation or something where these two guys were hauling around a dead body?
Yeah, right. Weekend with Bernie's, I think, something like that.
Yeah, Dr. Stan. They had to come out with a two, also a two, and it was so funny and hilarious. It started there, and also now I noticed that a friend of mine has a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old. So we were in the Walmart, in the kids section, they had these black coats with skeleton skulls on them, right? So there you go, some more demonic garbage there. And also, real quick here, George Bush, Augustus Caesar Bush, now I believe that abortion has to play a major part in this. I mean, you know, your kid, when a kid realizes it's okay to murder a baby, I mean, it's all downhill from there. But in March of 2002, George Bush gave the authority, I don't know why he would have the authority, to allow 80 human embryos to be sent for scientific research. It's ghoulish. Now, Dr. Stan, the Nuremberg Code, have you ever heard of that?
Sure.
Right after the Nazi trials there, we had the Nuremberg Code, which I'm sure the U.S. and many countries signed on to. This would be a violation of the Nuremberg Code, using the humans for the scientific research. But, Jane, would you please comment on the abortion has a correlation with this glorification of death?
Okay, thank you so much, Jim.
And abortion will be the judgment on our nation when we have aborted 40 million Americans, and they're being replaced with something like 40 million illegal aliens coming in, taking over our country. And with the abortion issue in the health ed and sex ed classes, and when abortion is promoted as the answer to a problem, and when the schools introduce sex education into the schools, so-called unwanted pregnancies skyrocketed. I believe every child is a blessing from the Lord, and to decide that you have the right to play God and kill that child fits right in with the other types of lifeboat games and things that the children have played in school, to where they're totally desensitized to death. And remember, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold did kill themselves.
And our guest today is Jane Schindler. Her video, Columbine, What Really Happened. And it's a gripping film, and you'll actually hear the discussions with some of the children, young people who were there. And then, of course, the interview with this girl who 10 years ago or more had gone to Columbine and, of course, tried to kill herself after the death education she'd had. And, of course, she brings sort of up to date on what's going on there. Well, what are some of the other things that they'll see in the video?
Well, you will see the different forces that are targeting your children. And Columbine is not alone out there. This is throughout the country. And we try to give the parents a background of what was going on there, who these people are, and you'll get in a nutshell what Shel Silverstein is doing. You will see it for yourself, what's happening in these little supposedly children's books. We talk about the video games that have played such a part in Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold's lives. Well, these video games must be too per family that are sold every week. So you know that it's not just Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold playing these games. You need to see what's behind them, what the games are all about, how they use them. It's 20 years of research rolled into an hour, and I think that every minister, Sunday school teacher, parent, take it and rent the room at your library and show it to a group of your friends, and help us build an army out here to protect our children. And we hope to have information for you to keep you updated on what's going to happen with this $82 million and where this death education is going to come. I have here in front of me that in Illinois, Phineas, Illinois, they have adopted suicide education, because they had a couple of kids commit suicide. The school board said, I think you're planning an idea in all the rest of these kids' minds, and that this is not a good idea. Well, here it comes. It is coming to a neighborhood where you live, and you need to know about it for the sake of your children.
And, of course, when you talk about it, you talk about death, and you talk about suicide, and you talk about death, and you talk about suicide, and you talk about death, and you talk about suicide, and then you wonder why the children get a fixation on death and suicide?
Yes. And I'd like to leave you with the thought that when Judy Garland was making The Wizard of Oz, she was beginning to become a young lady, and they didn't want that. So back 50 years ago, they knew that Ritalin would stunt her growth and that it was very addictive. And she had a lifelong addiction.
So they started on Ritalin at that time just to prevent her going through menarche and to prevent her growth, because Ritalin actually slows growth and shrinks, keeps the brain small. And then, of course, but she was started her addiction there. And it was with her all the rest of her life. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program with Jane. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest has been Jane Schindler, and we're from the Eagle Forum there in Colorado. Jane, do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out this evening?
Yes, we have a National Eagle Forum website. You can go to www.eagleforum.com. And we have all kinds of information on there to keep you updated. And, of course, you can get our video through Dr. Stan's program. And we would urge you to do that for your own information. It would be so helpful. I also had someone ask about if a child is put on Ritalin, do they ever get off of it? Well, you know, John Kennedy was put on Ritalin at the age of 12. He was still on it when he died.
And so, I think it's a terrible thing to start children on these addictive drugs. Now, Ritalin is a class 3 drug. It has to have a prescription to get it. Why? Because it's addicting. And there are 6 million American children on Ritalin today. How do you feel about that out there in the listening audience? Are you concerned? And now, with the new mental health initiative, they want, of course, to begin checking the mental health of every child. And you know, if there's something wrong with them, you know what they're going to want to do. It seems like we live in a world gone mad, Jane.
Yes, we do. And our children are at risk. And I would encourage every parent to become involved with your child and know what's going on with them.
I would, too. Go ahead.
You could pay an ultimate price, whether you're the mother of the child that's killed or the mother of the killer. It's just so important. Your child's life is so important. Do become involved and take them to church on Sunday.
Amen to that. Well, I remember, of course, that Klebold and Harris, they really did specifically target certain Christian children, and, of course, they killed them when they professed their faith. So understand that there really were, I believe, dark spiritual forces that were energizing these young people, and they were victims of an educational system that focused their attention on violence and sex and suicide and death. And the end result of it was the story of Columbine, what really happened. Jane, thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners? About 30 seconds?
Yes, I do. Nothing has changed at Columbine, and it's going on in your school, too. And any information that you have, we would appreciate your sharing it with us, too.
All right. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, that was Jane Schindler, and I hope you enjoyed the program. If you can't enjoy something like this, but forewarned is forearmed. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we just mentioned, of course, we do carry Columbine, what really happened. We think it's an excellent video. And, of course, one reason we've asked Jane to come back on with us again on the program was to let you remind you about this. It's an important message. Remember, they're out after the souls of our children. There really is an organized effort to create mental disease in our children and, of course, destroy their faith in God and in family and in country. Now, that's because there are certainly evil forces out there. If you'd like to get the video we've talked about, Columbine, what really happened, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Let me mention, of course, we carry the Megiddo Part 1, which is really the story of prophecy, and then carrying it up through World War I and World War II and World War III, because we are in World War III. We're in the early stages of World War III. We're doing everything we can to inflame the anger and hostility and frustration of the Muslim population, of the 1.25 billion Muslims who live in the world, and turn them against America. Our leaders know exactly what they're doing. If you don't inflame the enemy, you're not going to have an enemy to fight. And we, of course, are antagonizing the Arabs all throughout the world, not by accident, but by intent and preparation for World War III. You've got to get the other side to hate you, so they will commit atrocities so you can hate them. Because that's what war is all about, isn't it? Killing things and killing people and breaking things and destruction and devastation. And well, Megiddo 1 is the story of the First World War, the Second World War, and the coming Third World War. Megiddo 2 is the story from the Garden of Eden right up to the present time, and of the occult influence that affects every aspect of our lives. Now, these are both very professionally done. I have a small part in Megiddo 2, where we introduce you to the Georgia Guidestones, where we introduce you to Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, and I'd say that these are excellent videos. They're entirely different. They're the first two in a series of about five videos that I think are well worthwhile watching. We wouldn't be carrying them otherwise. And then, of course, we want to remind you about they sold their souls for rock and roll, either the 3 or the 4 or the 10-hour version of that. And I will promise you that all of these videos are excellent. They're very professionally done. Unlike many of the videos we produce are not professionally done. They're simply me talking with perhaps a little bit of information interspersed. But we have, of course, my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, which if you can stand me talking for 2 hours to give you the background of what's really going on today, I think The Brotherhood of Darkness is a very good video. Actually, I had one fellow call me and tell me he had watched it 7 times. I haven't watched it 7 times myself. And then, of course, we have Iraq, the Untold Story. We have a number of videos going into the background of what happened on 9-11, 9-1-1, prior knowledge. We have a video called None Dare Call It Genocide. It's our latest video. It goes into the fact that there is an organized genocidal effort in America today. For instance, did you know that that if you take your a hepatitis B vaccine, why your chance of getting multiple sclerosis triples within 3 years? Why would they be giving that to nurses and doctors across America? Did you know, for instance, that if you drink the milk that comes from cows that have gotten the recombinant growth hormone, that your chance of getting breast carcinoma goes up 7 times, or your chance of getting prostatic cancer triples? Well, you're not going to get these ideas elsewhere, but the information is there. That comes from the Seeds of Deception, and it'll be in our new 4-tape set on genetically originated food, genetically created food, I'm sorry. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Hope you'll want to get some of the items. Remember, we do carry the Big Berkey products. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, and please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back here in just a few minutes with the next hour of Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from Canada, a very good friend. We haven't had a chance to talk to him for a good long while, but I wanted to get Don Scott on. And Don is a retired teacher, but he's done a lot of work on mycoplasma, on the diseases that have been actually created by our government for experiments. He's written a book that we carry. What was that book that you wrote about, the experiments that were done in Nevada?
Yes, we call it the Extremely Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident.
The Extremely Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident. We actually carry the book because, of course, it goes into the background of the fact that all sorts of horrible and macabre experiments have been done by our government, always in the name, of course, of wanting to fight the communists. So we had to create these new diseases and do all of this metal research and then all of this genetic research, and really all this whole genetic engineering began back in the 1950s under CIA auspices, as they recruited scientists to create new types of terrible diseases, among one of which, I believe, is the AIDS epidemic. Go ahead, and Ebola, the Lyme disease, these are all new diseases, a certain mycoplasm. They've created new forms of mycoplasm. They even have a patent on this mycoplasm that you find with AIDS, that you find with chronic fatigue syndrome, that you find with fibromyalgia, and of course with other diseases as well. It's incredible the blatancy that they do, figuring the American people would never believe would create these horrible new diseases, because nothing could be that evil, or could it? Go ahead, Don, tell us what you're working on now.
Well, thank you for the introduction, Dr. Stan. It's nice to be back with you. I thought that at the beginning of the program, I would like to draw a comparison, if I could, between the current tsunami, which has ravaged Asia, Indonesia, Thailand, Sri Lanka, India, and so on, and the terrible death toll there of apparently right now close to 160,000, and quite likely going higher than that, but at the present moment somewhere around 160,000 people have died in Asia as a consequence of an earthquake and a great tidal wave that radiated out over the low-lying coasts of those countries. Now, it's a terrible toll, but it helps to put into perspective the very thing that you've been speaking about in the introduction, the awful AIDS epidemic that is current in the world today. I'd like to draw attention to the fact for your listeners that 8,000 people die each day of AIDS.
All right, with that thought, Don, I want you to hold your thought. We're going to have to take a quick break here. But Don is pointing out 8,000 people a day die of AIDS. But we really don't even think of that anymore. Over 20 million have died. That's a statistic, that's not human beings. Oh, our guest this evening is Don Scott. Don, go ahead. You're pointing out that 8,000 people die every single day of AIDS, and we don't even focus our attention. We don't pay much attention to that anymore. We don't pay much attention to the fact that over 20 million people have died throughout the world. Over 500,000 people have died here in the United States in what is a totally unnecessary epidemic. We're not doing anything from a logical point of view even to try to stop the spread of the disease. They spend a lot of money, but it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all rhetoric over reality. We got to give the people the idea we're trying to do something when we're really not. So pick up the story from there, Don.
Well, thank you, Dr. Monteith. Now, that 8,000 a day is equivalent to 18 to Sammy's a year, or one every 3 weeks. Now, just imagine the great tsunami that swept the Asian Ocean, the Indian Ocean, and took 160,000 lives the day after Christmas. Imagine that happening. Different places in the world every 3 weeks, as far into the future as one can project. That is the AIDS epidemic. And the most horrible aspect of this is that man, as you mentioned in your introduction, made the AIDS disease agents. There are really two of them, in American laboratories and universities with certain allied help. And tragically, among those allies were Canada. Canada with its Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, participated in the experiments that were entered into the development of the cofactors for AIDS. And in other words, the predominantly American scientists have unleashed a tsunami every 3 weeks into the world. But it's not the dramatic tsunami, with the great waves rolling across the ocean and sweeping inland, and wealthy tourists jumping up from the side of their pools, swimming pools, and joining these hordes of local residents and running desperately ahead of a wave. It's a wave every 3 weeks, which takes place so silently in tin-roofed huts in Africa, and now spreading into so many other countries, but predominantly Africa.
And hold that thought for a moment.
All right.
This is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Don Scott, and he's talking about how the AIDS epidemic creates more casualties in 3 weeks than the tsunami we've just witnessed. And, of course, every 3 weeks, could you imagine if we had a tsunami every 3 weeks with 168,000 people dying, the impact that that would have? And yet we don't pay any attention to the AIDS epidemic today. It's been put on the back burner. Oh, we know there's a problem. But who's really concerned, first, where this epidemic came from? This is an entirely new disease. And then why we're not using any of the standard and effective public health measures to stop the spread of this terrible disease that's already claimed over 20 million lives, another 40 million people infected, 500,000 dead in America. And is anybody really concerned? Go ahead, Don.
Well, thank you. Not only did American scientists, with the help of scientists in Canada and Britain and Australia, especially, and Israel, develop the AIDS cofactors, but it was paid for by the listeners to this program. It was paid for by American taxpayers. People who go to work each morning and do their jobs in the schoolrooms and the factories and the offices and so on, and at the end of the week or the end of the month get a paycheck for their labors, have a certain amount of that paycheck withheld from them, and the government says to them, this is used to help you have a better life. This is income tax, which we are using on your behalf. And we have minutes of a meeting which took place when it was discussed that they would use tax money to finance AIDS, June the 9th, 1969.
And that was when Dr. MacArthur testified before the House Appropriations Committee on Military Affairs and talked about creating a new disease. If they'd give him $10 million, creating a new disease for which there'd be no immune response, and another form of mass killing. And some people thought they shouldn't go ahead and develop this because it would be another form of mass killing, but they'd go ahead and do it. They really needed to. They wanted the $10 million. And any of your listeners out there who question that this happened, we have copies of the government report tells you exactly what I've told you. If you'd like to read that and the words of Dr. MacArthur that Don is talking about, and I think it's one of the most frightening things that the average American doesn't understand, that this was planned. We have the hearings. Somebody sent them to me, somebody in government that wanted me to have it, and I know that Don has copies of that as well. So why don't the average American know that they planned on this and they knew it was a method of mass killing, and they talked about it in the congressional committee hearings with the congressman there, and then they gave him the money to do it? Go ahead, Don.
Yes, paid for by American taxpayers. Three tsunamis, a tsunami every 3 weeks. And it has been hidden by the mainstream American media. Stories about the reality of AIDS and how it was developed. There have been stories, especially at the outset, which leaked into the press. The Times of London carried a story by their science editor, Wright was his name, and the Chicago Tribune carried a very good story a few years ago. But when came to be realized by the masters of mainstream media that, hey, this wasn't just a story of people dying of a new disease, this was a product. Of American millionaires and defense people working to reduce the world's population, they began to muzzle the writers who otherwise would look into this story. I had an example about 3 or 4 months ago, maybe a little longer now, when one of the large media in the United States, NBC News, phoned me from New York City, and a reporter said she had come upon evidence of this, and she couldn't believe it, and her editor had told her to go ahead and look into it a little bit and give a report to the meeting of their news department that took place every morning. And so she was calling me, and I gave her some of the key details. I told her about the June 9th, 1969 meeting between the Defense Department, Dr. MacArthur, and 12 members of the House of Representatives. And I told her about the patent held on the pathogenic mycoplasma held by the United States government, and how in that patent it states that AIDS is a consequence of the mycoplasma along with a great number of other diseases. And she said, my goodness, I can't believe this. And I said, well, we've got the documents. And she said, would you send them to me? And I said, yes, if you will pay for it. And she said, well, here is our Federal Express shipping number. You just put them into the hands of Federal Express tomorrow, and they'll bring them right to us, and you won't have to pay. Just give them this number. And I said I would do that. And then she said she'd read them and get back to me. And I said, well, look, you'll read them all right. I can believe that. But I said, you won't get back to me. And she says, why? What? Why not? And I said, because when you tell the people at that newsroom meeting that you've got these documents and they actually say what we have been saying they say, the editor's going to tell you that, look, so-and-so, I have her name here, but I won't mention it on air, she you will be told, drop the story. And she said, oh, no, not if it's what you say. And I said, well, all right, I'll send you the documents. I sent them off and never heard from her again. NBC News. Now, not only was it developed by the Americans, paid for by the taxpayers, and ignored by the American media, the whole process is supervised by American government right to this very day. Key administrators in the Department of Defense, in the Centers for Disease Control, in the National Institutes of Health, and other branches of American government know what's going on and have very powerful positions. One of them had a budget of $4 million, a budget of $12 million, given to him by Congress to investigate where a sister disease to AIDS, chronic fatigue syndrome, was to be studied by the Centers for Disease Control, and this individual was given $12 million into his care and control, and he lost $4 million of it. And he was never fired. He was transferred out of the position as director of the Centers for Disease Control, but he was never fired because the records show, when you study the scientific records, the records show that he was involved in some very critical elements of the research necessary to develop the cofactor of AIDS. And he knows too much to be fired. So he lost $4 million of taxpayers' money, and he's still on the taxpayers' payroll.
Now, for our listeners, John, let me explain that the AIDS, certainly the people with AIDS have HIV disease, but they also have a cofactor, in other words, a second factor, and that is they all have a genetically engineered mycoplasm. And the mycoplasm, of course, you need the two together to get the clinical picture of AIDS. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. The one cofactor, the mycoplasma you mentioned, is derived from a bacterial nucleic acid, and it puts down the human immune system. It renders the individual refractory to the immune system upon which we depend to protect us from ordinary diseases, and it allows then the second factor, which is called a retrovirus, derived from the Vizsla virus of sheep, to get into the cells of the human individual, and the RNA of that retrovirus takes over the DNA of the human cells and manufactures more of itself. That's why it's such a deadly thing. It couldn't get in there if it wasn't for the mycoplasma altering the immune system. And we have all the government evidence to this effect. We have progress report number 9 of what they call the Special Virus Cancer Program. And this program was designed actually after the fact. It was designed after the AIDS cofactors were developed and put into the human family, but it was a case where the researchers and the U.S. government and military had put this terrible disease agent into the human family without actually knowing the full consequences of their activities. And in an attempt to find out what all these consequences were going to be, they, under Nixon, they developed what they called the Special Virus Cancer Program for his great war on cancer.
We'll be back here in just a moment, Don. Hang on. All right. right, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, this is Don Scott from Canada, who's done a lot of research and fascinating material. And, of course, we're talking about the so-called war on cancer, and ever since we had the war on cancer, why, us shucks, we seem to have more and more and more cancer. And, of course, what they did is they financed all these mad scientists who actually were learning how to do genetic engineering and create new and terrible, terrible diseases. So pick up the story from there, Don.
Yes, we have, thanks to people throughout the United States, a great number of them have come upon various of these government documents, and you have some in your library, and you make them available to your listeners, and we have other documents, many of which I imagine you don't have, because we focus on this particular area, the health research part of it. And on page 39 of Progress Report number 9 of Nixon's Great War on Cancer, they have this statement: "We have learned for the first time that in order to activate RNA-directed DNA polymerase," now that's the retrovirus taking over the human DNA, "it is necessary first to alter the endocrine balance." And the endocrine balance, of course, is achieved or put out of balance by the mycoplasma, which uptakes preformed sterols and hence cuts down the number of hormones that can be created, and the endocrine balance is altered, and away we go with AIDS. Now, this is in a government document that we have, which Richard Helms a few years ago ordered to be destroyed. Fortunately, a couple of copies escaped the shredders, and some listeners in the United States, knowing of our search, found these copies, or found a copy of it, made copies, and sent them to me, or sent them to our foundation. Now, in other words, the U.S. government researched, financed, deployed the AIDS cofactors in order to kill 8,000 people a day. Or at least 18 tsunamis a year, courtesy of the United States government and the United States taxpayers and the United States militarists who are in the Department of Defense and in the Centers for Disease Control.
But isn't this disease really, in large part, really sort of engineered to pick off the blacks and the Hispanics? In other words, aren't they much more susceptible because of the way this is engineered?
Yes, as you know, human beings differ mildly from one another genetically. Some have genes which give them slanted eyes, and others have genes which give them black-colored skin. And if they can tie some of their disease agents onto known physical factors of these individuals, they can target certain racial groups to suffer more than others. And we've got much, much evidence of the racial element of the research. They were especially targeting the black people of this world. What a terrible, terrible, absolutely terrible crime, but it was done, and the consequences are
current in the
world.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Don Scott, and he's talking about a racial profiling, genetic racial profiling, designer diseases to knock out certain racial groups, certain racial people of races of people in this country. And if you doubt that there really are people that feel this way, you really need to go to the website, newamericancensory.org. Read the Rebuilding America's Defenses there, and of course they will tell you that they are looking to the future when we will have the ability to create diseases that will target certain specific racial groups. They're looking to the time when they can target certain specific racial groups, creating these new bacteriological diseases to target racial groups. That is these the new neoconservatives and the project for the new American century that today control the American government and hold the president and the presidency hostage. Go to their website, newamericancentury.org, the document, Rebuilding America's Defenses. They planned, and of course this plan has been in place for a long time, to target racial groups, and I believe that AIDS was a specifically racially targeted group, which is why so many more blacks have gotten the disease, not only in Africa, but right here in America. 60% of the new cases of AIDS in America just happened to be in the black population. Do you think that happened by accident? Go ahead, Don.
Well, thank you, and we have it in writing, too. There was a document written back in the early 1970s, actually started in the late 60s, when Dr. Henry Kissinger was appointed National Security Advisor to the criminal Richard Nixon. Kissinger wrote a paper called NSAM 200.
National Security Study Memorandum 200, right.
Yes, indeed. And this memorandum sets out the necessity of limiting the growth of the world's population. Oh, Dr. Stan, this is such a tragic thing. But it sets out that 13 nations in particular, and they're all in Africa, which have a growing population problem. Now, who's it a problem for? It was a problem for Henry Kissinger, the arch-tipple gangster of the world, and all his sponsors, the Rockefellers and the others, and his political boss, so-called, Nixon. But it was a case of poor Nixon thinking that he was in charge of Kissinger, when actually Kissinger was in charge of Nixon. But our foundation has many of the critical documents to prove these horrendous charges, just as you do, Dr. Stan. And you make them available to your listeners, and the listeners can get them, and they can read them, and they can see this, but they don't. A few do, but most don't. A few years ago, about 5 years ago now, decided that I had to make this almost my life work. I was 75 years old at the time, and I'm now 80. And I set out to make a list of 10 people that I thought I'll approach these 10, and the 10 of us will form a core to really put forward the reality of AIDS. And I couldn't think of 10. And I only could think of about 5, and I contacted the first person on that list, a very fine gentleman in so many respects, and he wanted to come and talk to me about it before he would agree to anything, and he came, and he listened to my evidence and all the rest of it, and then he produced a letter which he had pre-typed. He is typed ahead of time. And he read it to me, stating that he would not be able to afford the time or the energy to work with me. And the fact that he had typed it before he heard the evidence, I thought, is so typical of humanity. And the second person I phoned was a retired United Church minister, a wonderful gentleman in so many respects. And he was always very kind to me because I had two or three of his sons as students in my classes at high school, and he told me that unfortunately he still, although retired, he did a number of funerals and weddings and all the rest of it for his congregation and past congregation and their children, and he couldn't work with me. And the same with the other three. One was a leading member of the trade union movement in Sudbury, and he had a great reason why he couldn't.
Hold that thought right there, Don. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Don, go ahead, pick the story up from there.
All right, thank you. As I say, the major media won't report the truth, and I couldn't find 10 people, or 9 people actually, to make 10 of us, to make this our life effort. And no dint in the major media there. And, of course, the congressmen and senators dare not ask the questions. I sent facts after facts to leading congressmen, especially Democrats, who have always postured as being the champion of the common person and the great defenders of democracy. They never, ever, ever reply, no matter how quietly objective I am. And then when I write to them, I am just very objective and very scientific. They are part and parcel of the system because, gosh, they like their jobs and they like their money, and they don't really have an impulse to do anything about this terrible, every 3 weeks, a tsunami killing 160,000 people, so they don't answer me. And then there's the average citizen. And unfortunately, the average citizen is too brainwashed, too stressed by his worldly problems. You know, when you get a minimum wage, you got to come home and feed a family and do all those things. Who cares? Or he's too distracted by the circuses that Caesar spoke of. Give them bread and circuses and they won't be concerned about national issues. The Super Bowl, the World Series, the O.J. Simpson trial, the Twin Towers destruction, 3,000 and some deaths. But that's so piddling compared to the 160,000 deaths in tsunami, and 8,000 a day that are dying of AIDS, and the Iraqi war. This is a terrible war, and it's one totally uncalled for. And yet it's being fought, and the flag is being waved by the United States of America. Now, all of these things make it impossible for the average citizen to hold very long.
Hold that thought right there. Well, Don is saying that he had tried to get other people to come in to help him, and they're really, everybody was just too busy. And then he's talking about the average individual being so busy they really can't be concerned about the tsunami that every 3 weeks kills about 168,000 people. So pick up the story from there, Don, because I know it's discouraging for you, but then great things and important things are never done by committees or groups. They're usually done by individuals like you who are dedicated to getting to the truth.
Well, thank you again, Dr. Stan. All of the things that go on keep the average citizen from thinking about the true horror of America. Now, it isn't just America. It's only that the Americans had the capability. They had the money, and they had the scientists, and they had the people like Henry Kissinger and the Rockefellers and Richard Nixon and others. Other nations were involved in the same kind of research, and some did a great deal of work and some did hardly any, and some were the tail of the dog, like Canada is the tail of the dog for the U.S. research. I have been writing over the last 3 or 4 months to the regents of Queen's University in Kingston, and I've been saying to them in these letters, look, you people, you weren't on the board of regents for the university when the university was participating in this research, but we have the evidence of the research, and you as a university should now say, look, our predecessors were doing this and we're ashamed of it and we're sorry and we want to set it right. But they don't, they answered my first letter But they haven't answered any of the rest of the, that carried on. The first reply they sent me was that the main person involved, Dr. Reed, died in 1984, and they didn't know anything of his research because, unfortunately, through various bureaucratic bumbling, they had destroyed his evidence.
Now, I think it's important that our listeners understand that these were doctors, scientists all across the United States and Canada and perhaps in some other countries, hired probably by the CIA, but probably with funds from some other department, and they were all involved in learning how to create new and terrible and devastating diseases. And, of course, I'm sure this doctor in Canada that we're talking about was simply one of these, and they all knew what was going on. Now, I have one book called Full Disclosure, written by Dr. Gary Glum. He tells me that, you know, a man came to him, he was dying of cancer, and he said, you know, I don't have much longer to live. I want to tell you, I was part of the group that created the AIDS virus. I have had another very prominent physician, whose name will go unmentioned, who told me that other scientists have come to him and told him that they were part of it, but they thought it was just a scientific exercise. They never realized that this was going to be unleashed on the world. We're talking about AIDS. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, it's the horror of America. And from my perspective, it is the Fourth Reich. The Third Reich was destroyed by gallant American military and Canadian military and other allied military. But the spirit of the Reich was not destroyed. It was kept alive, and the leading people of the Third Reich were given American military uniforms, and under Operation Paperclip and other secret operations were brought from Germany to the United States and given jobs in the American Defense Department and the American National Institutes of Health and in the American Centers for Disease Control. And the Reich, although on paper it was destroyed, the Third Reich, the Fourth Reich just kept right on going. It's alive and well in the United States today, and the present goal is, of course, the subjugation of Iraq for the control of the oil there. But they have been diverted by a great natural disaster, which has caught the attention of people all over the world who are saying, oh my goodness, my gracious, 160,000 people dead. How tragic. And it is. My heart goes out to all of those people. And I sympathize with the people who hear the story and are shocked and moved and are doing the great work they're doing with sending money to the Red Cross and so on. But I ask them, not only send the money to the Red Cross, but send the money to your local AIDS association, because the tsunami that has taken those 160,000 lives is being repeated every 3 weeks throughout the world. No great waves sweeping across the jungle in Africa, just a silent disease of two disease factors, a mycoplasma and a Vizsla virus, engineered especially to hit the black people of the world and reduce the population at the rate of 8,000 a day. And when I see this, I realize that so many people say to us, don't ask me to be a Christian more than one day a year. I can manage it on one day. Every year I'll celebrate one Christian day, and we'll call it Christmas, and then I'll go back to being the taxpayer who finances the death and destruction of innocents in Africa, in clay huts, and in jungles, and I will go on listening to the Super Bowl when it comes about. Now, I'm being very stern here, I know, but believe me, I thought long and hard about how hard-nosed I would be in my chance to talk through you and your wonderful program to your listeners. And I decided I have to put aside all efforts to be kind and courteous about it and say to the average listener, what have you done about the tsunami of AIDS? Not the tsunami that racked the Asian Ocean on the 26th of December, but the one that has been waving through Africa and other countries since the smallpox vaccinations that took place in order to get these cofactors into the blood of people. And I know that I'm being tough about it, and when I say that it's the horror of America, I assume my share of responsibility as a Canadian. I have been after them politically, and after them in terms of the media, and after them in terms of following up with the universities. But by and large, it is a horror of the United States of America. And I have to state that very directly, because I don't want anybody to labor under any misapprehension or misunderstanding of what it is I'm saying. I, quite frankly, based upon all of these documents that I have, and many of which I know you have too, and I know of your good work in making them available to people, we can, if we were called before a grand jury and we were allowed to produce these documents one by one and point out the people and point out what they were doing, the grand jury would say unanimously at the end of the many weeks that would be taken to read and discuss these documents, they would say, you're right, Mr. Scott, AIDS was made in America, and it was made to reduce the rate at which the world's population is growing, and the major emphasis has been on the black and darker-skinned people of the world, because they're the ones who live down in those jungles and live down in those deserts. They're not free white and 21 folks here in North America and in Western Europe and so on.
Well, you know, Don, one of the things that really, when we first began talking about AIDS, you know, we focused it on, it was primarily a homosexual disease in the United States, and it seemed that, you know, it was going to spread from the homosexuals into the general white heterosexual population, and it never did. But why was it so prevalent in the homosexuals? And it wasn't, of course, until much later, and after reading the work of Strecker and talking to you and others, that it became very obvious that it appeared in homosexuals, primarily in young men who took a hepatitis B vaccine, that was given an experimental hepatitis B vaccine. They volunteered for the program, and we know in San Francisco, of the young men who took that hepatitis B vaccine, 75% of them contracted AIDS, and most of them are dead now. Then, of course, in the general homosexual population, it was nowhere near as high. So there is no question in my mind that it was introduced into the homosexual population in the vaccine, but they can't let the American people know that, and they certainly can't let the homosexuals know that. I'm sure you've gone into that, haven't you?
Yes, we have, and we've studied the reasoning behind the so-called free vaccinations that were given to homosexuals in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. These groups were told by newspaper advertisements that your lifestyle exposes you to hepatitis, and the United States government, ever alert and aware of their obligations to the people of the United States, are making available to you at no charge to you a hepatitis vaccine. Now, isn't this marvelous? Thousands of homosexuals in these cities lined up and took that vaccination, and as you point out, they developed, in 75% of the cases, they developed AIDS.
Isn't it wonderful what the government can do for you? We've got Roger on the line from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. You have a quick question?
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. I've been wanting to ask you, Dr. Stott. There's a fellow out of Philadelphia, I believe. I think a black fellow. I think he has a non-medical doctorate. The name Bond comes to mind, but it would not be Julian Bond. And I want
are you thinking of Boyd Graves?
Yeah, that's the one.
Boyd Graves.
I wanted to ask you on the specific differences you might have with his, I thought, somewhat less than plausible insistence that it's that AIDS was keyed to black genetic markers. I thought that was still maybe 50 years away at best before some devious person could have cooked that up. And secondly, he also rejects the somewhat higher promiscuity rates in America among blacks and in particular among Africa. So I think we were accurately told a lot higher promiscuity rates as being contributing to the transmission of AIDS.
All right, fine. Would you like to address those two issues, Don?
Yes, I know Dr. Ed Boyd Graves, and he was on our foundation executive for a period of time. Many of the things he says have been poo-pooed by the media and by the courts of America. See, Boyd Graves made a big mistake. He thought if you told a reasonable, logical judge sitting at the head of a courtroom some of this and showed them the evidence, that the judge would say, my goodness, we must pursue this further and find out for the sake of justice whether this is true. But, of course, the courts constantly rejected his offerings to show all of this evidence in public. And although there are a few little minor points of which we differ, they're not points of the major question. The major question is, where did AIDS come from? Well, there are cofactors developed in laboratories in the United States and primarily aimed at people of color, because it's people of color who do not occupy the predominant positions of power. They have now their tokens, that's true, in various positions like Colin Powell. He's almost black. He's more white than he is black, but he's constantly put forward as one of the leading spokesmen for the black community in the United States. What a line of baloney. He's just happens to be sufficiently black that he can pass as a spokesman for them. Going back to the vaccines for the homosexuals in New York, San Francisco, and San Diego, we've got copies of all of the documents that were put out at the time, and it was done with a number of people, including Dr. Smoothness and others. And the whole goal was this: if we give it to this terrible disease, if we give it to the homosexuals of these three cities, then we can call it, as Time magazine called it, the gay plague, and we can have the Christian right say this is God's punishment for their terrible lifestyle. Then people will be so preoccupied with this handful of gays in the States, they will ignore the millions of heterosexual, hardworking, tragically discriminated against black people of the Africa and the rest of the world. And it worked. I remember
let me just let Roger go. Roger, I think that Boyd Graves is absolutely right. I do not believe there's anywhere near as much promiscuity in Africa as there is in the United States. So listen to what Boyd says. He's got a few ideas I wouldn't agree with completely, but I think he's done a great job, and I really admire him for having the courage to speak out.
What about being keyed to African genetic markers?
It is, definitely. If you want a documentation, call me off the air, and I'll send you a copy of my book, AIDS, The Untold Story, where I actually go into the scientific studies that showed it is keyed to specific markers found in the black. Okay?
God bless you.
God bless. Bye-bye. So go ahead.
Yes, well, thank you very much, Roger, for your questions and for your thinking about it. God bless you that you're at least thinking about it. And I hope that there will be several more Rogers in your listening audience who will be thinking about it and who will, I hope, be offended by what I've said, because then they can challenge me. They can say, Senator, tell me about NSAM 200. Tell me about the meeting between the Congressman and Department of Defense in June 1969. Tell me about this patent held by the United States government on the pathogenic mycoplasma. And when they've seen the evidence, they will join you and I and Boyd Graves and others and say, my good heavens, God's children being swept off the face of the earth at the rate of 8,000 a day because the industrial, financial, political empire, defense empire.
Hold on, hold that thought right there. Okay, go ahead, Don. We'll just finish up. We've got 3 more minutes to go. Go ahead.
Well, I would like any questions that if you have any listener phoning in again, well, I would.
It's a little too late for them to call in. I'm sure, actually, I found through the years that when we have a really fascinating guest like you, people don't usually call. So I don't feel offended that they haven't called in.
Oh,
I know
I don't
that they're
mind.
Out there, they're listening, and I think that hopefully you've provoked their concern, and that they will realize that, you know, no man is an island. We are all part of the whole. And when any man dies, it reflects on me. And as it had been said so long ago, for ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. And so I think it's so important that people understand that there is a major epidemic out there. Don has done some amazing work, accumulated many of these documents, some of which we have and we'll make available to you. Certainly that report, Dr. MacArthur talking to the doctors in Congress, we actually mentioned some people think we shouldn't create this new disease, but after, just because it would be another more form of mass killing, but we want to go ahead and do it anyway. And they gave them the money, and they created the disease, and 8,000 people die every day, and nobody is concerned.
Yes. In conclusion, could I give my telephone
you
number?
You go right ahead, please, if you have a website or whatever you'd like.
Yes, I'm not on the web for a variety of reasons, but I have decided to make my number available. I never used to do this, but it's too tragic a situation. 705 is the area code, 705. And the phone number is 670-0180. Now, I'll answer between 9 each morning and 9 each evening, Eastern Standard Time. Outside of those times, the phone will be disconnected, and I'll try to get to sleep at my 80-year-old body and brain needs. But between 9 in the morning and 9 in the evening, if you want to call me and if you want to challenge these documents, or they can get them from you, I know, or discuss certain aspects, or if you want to become one of the other 9 people in our group of 10, I would be happy to hear from you. But area code 705 670-0180, and as you say at the offset of the program each evening, illusion is usually king. And if you are living under an illusion that you're in a democracy, well, that is the illusion. Thank you, Dr. Stan. Keep up your good work, and God bless you.
And thank you so much. And again, the name of that book, which we carry of yours, the very strange...
Yes, it's called The Extremely Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident. Just refer to it as Skull Valley. The title comes from the June 9th, 1969 hearings. Dr. MacArthur talks about this tragic event that happened in Skull Valley.
And,
thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night, and God bless you, Don.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. That was Don Scott, certainly one of my favorite guests, and he does is doing a tremendous job of putting together information. The very unfortunate Skull Valley incidents was when they used a nerve gas, on this, I believe it was in the middle of the Nevada desert, and they killed a whole flock of sheep. Could have killed a whole flock of individuals, but they only killed a few sheep there. And, of course, government denied it. But they buried all the bodies because they didn't want any evidence that they were experimenting with poison gas. Well, there are lots of stories out there that you need to have. And we, of course, you haven't read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Let me recommend it. Let me recommend Emerging Viruses by Dr. Len Horwitz, so we carry that book. We think it's important. My Population Control Agenda monograph, our four-tape set on population control, our video on population control. We even have a special on population control. And all of this information is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Don's book, The Very Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident, goes into all of these macabre experiments the government was doing. Very well done, very well documented. And, of course, it all came out of the CIA. Orders were given that all the records were to be destroyed. And all the records of the Special Virus Cancer Project, and they put out one every year for 15 years, they were all to be destroyed. And fortunately, they didn't do a very good job, because I have 8 and 9, and of course, Don, I think, has the full, almost the full set of them, 8 to 15. Now, all the early ones were destroyed, but we know that they actually did create these terrible new diseases, and this is the basis of genetic engineering that is being used now to change foods, to create new viruses, to create new bacteria, to create new plagues. And if you'd like to get that video, the book we carry, Seeds of Deception, Going into Genetically Modified Food, you want to get that. We'll have a four-tape set on genetically modified food in the very near future. We've got my son's in the process of putting it together. If you need to get the four-tape set on fluoride, or you need to get the book, The Fluoride Deception, or Dr. Blaylock's wonderful book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, that has a section on fluoride and on mercury and on aspartame. I recommend that book very strongly. We have four tape sets on aspartame. We have Dr. Robert's wonderful book, Aspartame, The Forgotten Epidemic. And of course, we also carry Dr. Blaylock's book on aspartame. You must understand they're poisoning our children's minds with aspartame. They're poisoning our children's minds with fluoride. You'll drop 10 points. Your child will drop 10 points in their IQ if they have high levels of fluoride in your drinking water. You don't even need the drinking water. If you get regular levels of about 1 point per million, and then you eat all the other things that you come in contact with and drink your soft drinks and eat your vegetables and eat your Wheaties or your cereals that have the fluoride in it and drink your grape juice, and you'll get enough fluoride to lower your IQ about 10 points. And it's not coming back again. And then mercury does the same thing. About 1 in 6 children in America today has a neurodevelopmental disorder directly related to the mercury toxicity of the vaccines that they've been given. And, of course, the mercury that they got from their mother's fillings when they were in utero. And the average American has no idea we're poisoning our children. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. We do carry the Big Berkey and other products. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.